Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're beginning the show today by talking about elder abuse awareness. And we have a couple of guests for you today. One, Amber Hahn. She's the assistant district attorney for Fond du Lac County. Amber, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
With us as well, Doreen Gash. She is a social worker who works with elder abuse victims through the Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging Resources based in Walworth County. She's also a project coordinator for an abuse in later life grant in Walworth County. Doreen, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me as well.
So as we talk with our experts today, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about elder abuse? How to identify it, maybe? How to report it? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Doreen, let's start with you. Tell us broadly maybe about elder abuse. What is it?
Well, it's clearly defined in our statutes. Wisconsin Statute 4690 identifies the areas of concern, which are physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, financial exploitation, and self-neglect. And elder abuse refers to an individual who is age 60 or older, and that is also defined by statute.
So where does elder abuse typically occur? Does it occur throughout the state?
It certainly does. In 2022, according to the Department of Health Services statistics, the state received over 10,700 reports of elder abuse in Wisconsin.
So there are a number of ways abuse can occur. What are the warning signs that someone is experiencing elder abuse?
Well, it depends which type of abuse you're looking at, but one must always remember that one form of abuse does not exist in a vacuum. There's usually polyvictimization is what we refer it to. So for instance, if someone is being financially exploited, they also may be being emotionally abused as well as physically abused or some other form of abuse.
And, you know, and as you say, it occurs throughout Wisconsin. We don't seem to hear that much about it, or I, you know, sometimes wish we maybe received more information about it.
That is true. We're doing what we can to educate everybody about elder abuse. Globally, World Elder Abuse Awareness Day occurs on June 15th. Throughout the world, and that is a day of recognition and education and informing people that this is clearly a problem that needs to be addressed.
So I'm trying to, there are all these different forms of it. Is elder abuse, when it comes to monetary or financial abuse, is that pretty common?
It is the crime of the century, financial exploitation. Billions of dollars are lost annually to individuals who are age 60 and above, and for those who are also 18 to 59. Those signs are pretty clear. They can be outright theft. They can be transferring of accounts. They can be sudden additions to someone's bank account or the depletion of bank accounts. It's very sad, and it's very devastating for the victims.
Yeah. Amber, let me turn to you for a minute. When there's a reported case of elder abuse, who is it that reports it typically?
Yeah, reporting can actually happen in a number of different ways. Traditional ways still work. So you can certainly go to your local law enforcement department to report suspected elder abuse. There's also other resources. Every county has an adult protective services in their county. They will have a toll-free and a local phone option where reports of elder abuse are received. Typically, that'll be between regular business hours, Monday through Friday, although they should also have an answering service usually if you want to report different hours. And those reports go to local social workers who by statute, respond within 24 hours to that report. And those statistics that Doreen mentioned, those are built off of those reports. So when she says over 10,700 reports, those are coming into our local adult protective services departments and then being recorded on a statewide basis. So those are probably the two best ways to report elder abuse. And I always encourage people to do both, especially if you believe an actual crime is being committed, that even if you do report to adult protective services, it's not a bad idea to also report to your local law enforcement.
Boy, it's... I'm thinking 10,700 or over 10,000 anyway, and then I'm wondering how many are not reported. Of course, we have no way of knowing, but Doreen, you're betting that it's more than 10,000.
Well, statistically, for every one report that is received, 23 to 24 reports never reach Adult Protective Services or are never reported. So think about this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, man. What is, talk more about Adult Protective Services.
Well, Adult Protective Services is present in every county. And upon receipt of a referral, it is their job to start an investigation. They do background information to see if they've ever had contact with this individual. And best practice is to go to the alleged victim's residence and interview that person and decide from their conversations with them and maybe conversations of others, what is occurring and how. What sort of least restrictive intervention can be used to remedy the situation?
Desiree in Dubuque, Iowa has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Desiree.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
So I've been listening to you guys, and my question is basically, I have a grandmother. She's about 83 years old. And she has been dealing with this abuse for quite some time. And it's been something that I've tried to, you know, take my own actions with. But as far as reporting it to the authorities, what I'm running into is she lives in Arizona while I don't live there. So how do I go about reporting if the elderly person is in another state?
That's a good question, and that probably is fairly common, Amber.
Yes, it is. And what you would want to do is you would want to look for, you want to base it off of where the elder lives. So the grandmother, you would look to what city or village or county she's residing in. And then you can look up the law enforcement and adult protective services that are available in that area. And certainly would be good maybe to start with adult protective services because as Doreen said, usually they're going to do a visit or at least check their records to see if they've had contact with her in the past and really see if there's services that they can connect her with. You know, sometimes victims of abuse don't maybe necessarily want to talk about what's going on, or they might have reasons why they're hesitant to talk about it. And that contact can be really positive to maybe bring some services that that person might be willing to engage in that might help the situation.
Yeah, I would think, and Doreen is probably one of those, a lot of times maybe an elderly person who's, as kind of Amber was getting at a little bit here, who is being abused in one way or another, might be even afraid to or feel afraid to talk about it.
Absolutely. That is 100% correct. Most of the time, the abusers are family members or relatives. And most mothers and fathers and grandparents do not want to admit that their family member is causing them distress, abusing them, and they don't want them to be in trouble for it. They don't want a son or a grandson to go to jail after abusing them. So it's often a little dance to try to remedy the situation and do what's right for that elderly victim.
Yeah. Eric in Marquette County will give you a chance to join in. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. So my wife's grandmother a few years ago came over to our house, and she said she was being abused by her daughter, which is my wife's mother. And we live in a small county, and my wife's mother's friends with the sheriff's department and everybody else. And so when they launched the investigation, she was called a week in advance and told that this was about to happen. So she was able to go tell her mother not to say anything. So nothing ever happened with this situation. She'd taken over her bank accounts, left her with no money or food. It was pretty bad, but nothing happened.
Oh, boy. Doreen, a comment.
Sadly, that should not occur. Most, if not all, Adult Protective Services visits should be an unannounced visit. There should be no warning given to anyone that this is occurring because of the fact that most of the time family members are involved. So I'm sorry that happened.
Yeah. Amber, anything else to add to that?
I guess I would just point out one thing, and I'm not sure, Eric, in your story, and again, I totally agree with Doreen, it should not have happened that way, and I'm so sorry that it did. One thing that occurred to me is that sometimes I encourage people to, if you have a situation like that where it is a small community and people are connected to one another, that Adult Protective Services might be a better place to start than law enforcement. I know you mentioned there was maybe a personal contact within law enforcement. And the reason being is that Adult Protective Services, there's certain confidentiality rules in play that are guarded pretty closely. And so sometimes if you're concerned about that sort of local interference or those local relationships maybe making a difference, that if the report goes to Adult Protection Services first, you should have a higher level of confidentiality with that first contact, if that helps at all.
Now, would that be, and I'm not telling Eric to do this, but would that be something that he might pursue his wife might pursue at this point?
Absolutely. I mean, you can't put the money back, right? He mentioned there was some money stolen, but and the criminal piece of it isn't helpful, but Adult Protective Services has other services and things that can be offered and that are, you know, not income-based. So if, you know, that contact can be helpful, at least to reach out to see if there's a service available that that individual might benefit from.
Eric, I'm sorry for your circumstances, but I really appreciate your call. Thank you so much, and I hope there's something that still might be done in this particular case. Sounds like there's some options. Doreen and Amber both commented on that. Appreciate your call very much. Doreen Gash is a social worker who works with elder abuse victims through the Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging Resources. Amber Hahn, assistant district attorney for Fond du Lac County. And if you have questions for them or maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert is our producer today. Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. We're taking a look at elder abuse, knowing the warning signs and how to report elder abuse with our two guests, Doreen Gash, a social worker who works with elder abuse victims, Amber Hahn, assistant district attorney for Fond du Lac County. Again, you can join in 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Samantha called, couldn't stay with us, called from Whitehall. What if you can't see signs of physical abuse on the victim and there's a case of dementia? How do you prove that something happened?
Well, I think there are other ways to prove that physical abuse is happening, even with dementia. Oftentimes people with dementia do have moments of clarity, and it's really important to perhaps interview that person or talk to that person at different times of the day. Perhaps they are really good in the morning, or maybe they experience what we refer to as sundowning in the afternoon. And if that's the case, you would want to avoid interviewing that person in the afternoon. Also, you'd have to look at where the bruising is occurring. A clear example of physical abuse would be bruising around the neck. That doesn't occur naturally when you take a fall or if you trip. I would want to get the doctor or the physician involved and maybe do a physical exam.
Yeah, that's a good part or good point, I should say. Well, what happens when there are criminal, Amber, maybe you can take this. What happens when there are criminal charges that stem from an elder abuse report?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So we have a number of statutes in Wisconsin that protect this population that address a number of different situations that might occur. And so ideally, if a case has proceeded to that point and is charged out, it's treated like any other criminal offense in Wisconsin, and it could resolve for some type of penalty, either supervised probation in the community, could involve monetary fines, or it could involve incarceration, either in jail or in prison, depending on the severity of the offense. If the person contests it, the case could end up in a trial setting, either in front of a judge or a jury, which does require sometimes, will require testimony of witnesses. But those are the two primary paths typically that a criminal charge would take.
We have a call from Cheryl in Clam Lake, so let's go there next. Cheryl, hi.
I just wanted the speakers to allude to financial abuse of the elders. I was a long-term care ombudsman in Ohio, worked for area agency there, and I saw a lot of financial abuse of elders, like in nursing homes or in assisted living. The family would use their credit cards, sometimes for just luxurious vacations, and also accessing the victim's bank account.
Yeah, Cheryl, thanks. Well, Doreen, we'll turn to you first for that. Doreen Gash?
Yes, that is definitely a crime, and that definitely needs to be reported to law enforcement and Adult Protective Services. Here in Wisconsin, Adult Protective Services has by statute a unique ability to get bank records without a victim's consent. Those bank records can tell a lot about what is happening and patterns of spending or questionable withdrawals or outright theft. So those incidents need to be reported. And I also want to add that Wisconsin has really a luxury of having a state Wisconsin elder abuse hotline. It's about 3 or 4 years old here in Wisconsin, and people can either make a report online at www.reportelderabusewi.org or by calling the toll-free number, which is 1-833-586-0107. These calls are taken Monday through Friday, 8 to 4:30, and that individual will then contact the county of responsibility where the alleged abuse is occurring.
You know what? I think we should just repeat that. The phone number is 1-833-586-0107. If I have that right.
And that is correct.
And the other, Wisconsin, go ahead and give that a
www.reportelderabusewi.org.
Wi.org. And we'll have that up on the Larry, on today's program notes today. So if folks didn't get that, and we'll probably repeat it another time before the show is over, because there are likely to be a few calls perhaps that will result from today's show. Cheryl, thank you so much. I'm wondering, maybe Amber, go to you to start anyway, the legal process for guardianship can come into play in abuse cases. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so I like to talk about guardianship as well as just estate planning, because a lot of times when we talk about elder abuse, family members may say, you know, I have a family member or person in my life that I'm concerned about risk of abuse. Perhaps they have progressing dementia, or there's a condition that a family member says, what can I do to protect my family members? Or maybe, you know, you're in your 40s or 50s and you're doing some estate planning and you're saying, well, you know, how can I protect myself as I get older? And there's two. So what happens when we have an individual that's experiencing abuse, and if they're in a mental condition or physical condition where they're unable to make their own decisions, that's when a guardianship comes into play. It's a pretty restrictive thing. So guardianship is not really an ideal thing that you want to have happen. It's more of a protection in place, sort of as a last resort. And so what people can do, though, is when they're talking to their attorneys or they're setting forth their estate plan, you can plan for guardianship. In the event that someone would want to put you under guardianship, you can specify or put things in your estate plan to indicate who you would want to serve in that capacity, or what you would want to have happen. Attorneys can also advise you as to ways to avoid guardianship. There's certain ways that you can set up your estate such that you would have provisions in place if you were ever to be deemed legally incompetent. And so it's a way for individuals to have control over that. Unfortunately, dementia is very widespread. It's very kind of common. I don't know that research has gotten everything nailed down, but it's not a bad idea to plan for the worst and hope for the best.
Yeah. And I was thinking about, let's say you've got someone, and I can speak from experience on this because I'm power of attorney for my elderly sister and brother, both of who are in. And I, as a power of attorney, I write a lot of checks. And I'm very careful on making sure that everything is properly taken care of. But I can see where this, here you've got maybe a power of attorney who then can write checks and take money. This has got to be, for some people, it may be more enticement than they can handle. Let's put it that way, Doreen.
Yeah, and there are ways that, let's say you are a power of attorney for someone and you suspect that this power of attorney is not acting in that person's best interest. Anyone can petition the court to review that power of attorney. And what that does is set up a hearing, and this power of attorney has to go to court and, you know, explain exactly how they have spent this person's money.
Yeah. Amber, you were nodding in agreement there, I think.
Yeah. So I would just add that power of attorneys that are set up through like a will and estate plan, those, you know, if you do know of a situation like that where you have a person acting as a power of attorney and you have concerns, like Doreen said, maybe you're seeing something, or maybe you're employed at a bank, or you're interacting with that person in the community and you just suspect that there's maybe something not quite right going on, that is a great reason to make a report either to the state hotline or your county adult protective services. They can investigate that. And if there is something going on that's harming that elder, that can then proceed through the system so that remedies can be put in place. So it's a great way for community members to have an impact on a potential reduction of abuse in the community. I would also point out another kind of warning sign of financial abuse that impacts those of us that might work in the retail industry is if you see an older adult that's buying a lot of like Visa gift cards or Google Play cards, or, you know, if you work at, for example, we've had tips that come in from US, like US postal offices or like package sending places. If you're seeing an older adult come in and they're maybe sending a lot of packages, they're maybe even mailing cash, If you're seeing that happen, you know, please call and make a report to the state hotline. Your reporters are confidential. They are protected by statute. Even bank employees, you know, we are encouraged and you are protected under the law if you want to report these things. And then, you know, let the groups that are responsible for that investigate and find out if, you know, your suspicion is correct or not. But it never hurts to at least report it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what kind of aftercare is needed for an elderly person who goes through a situation where they are abused?
Well, I think it's important, and social workers are highly trained in this area, to, number one, remedy the abuse and then put in supports that will prevent further abuse. Perhaps this person needs some care around their home, or maybe they need a nutritious meal once a day or twice a day. So it's kind of like rallying around this person to see what they need and what it is that will keep them safe.
Mm-hmm. And Amber, anything to add there?
Just that every situation is very unique. You know, every individual has different needs. Everybody's family situation. Some of us have natural supports. Some of us don't. And so that's really where I think social workers are amazing, because they can come in and see where the help is needed and maybe where that help is already filled.
Yeah. I just have to wonder how this, an incident like what we've been talking about here, how that affects the people involved long term. I mean, it must be.
Well, it can be very devastating to a victim of abuse, especially, like I said, when it is a family member. And sadly, that is how most of the abuse occurs, is by family members. And it's very hard to admit it. And it's hard to, most people don't want to break or sever that tie with their family. And sadly, by limiting, I guess we have to limit what we can do and what they're agreeable to do. That's a fine balance.
Yeah, and I would think for other family members or family members, what's the best way to support someone who's been through abuse?
I think by providing whatever they need. Should it be a support group? Should it be getting out and going to a senior center and talking about things with other seniors, bringing in family members who perhaps weren't involved, and involving them more in that person's life. I mean, we see family members scattered all over the United States who sadly don't have a lot of contact with their grandparent or parent.
Yeah, it's difficult. And Doreen, you're project coordinator for an abuse in later life grant in Walworth County. Can you talk about that? What's going on there?
I sure can. And there's another person at GWAR who is also a project coordinator for La Crosse, Polk, and Dunn counties. And the goal of this grant is to train law enforcement to recognize elder abuse and take appropriate action, and to recognize that these are crimes. They're not just civil issues if someone is being stolen from, etc. Getting them to cooperate and work closely with Adult Protective Services. Some law enforcement agencies aren't even aware of that there is an Adult Protective Service agency that they can contact, and they can conduct a joint investigation together. We're also, as part of this grant, sending judges to training on elder abuse so that they can more effectively deal with it in the courtroom. We are training prosecutors to hopefully bring forth more charges regarding elder abuse situations. And then we are also providing cross training for direct service providers. And that service providers can be anyone who touches the life of an elder. It can be an employee at a group home or an assisted living or a hospital. So we're trying to just bring more education and awareness to the whole issue of elder abuse.
And from your end, Amber, I imagine it's tough to see these cases come to your desk.
Yeah, they touch us deeply, I think, in a lot of different ways. And as Doreen had said, often can be very devastating, whether financial, emotional, physical, or like Doreen mentioned, we do see poly victimization in most, if not all, cases. And so they are difficult. And I think presenting them to juries and to courts is a challenge for prosecutors, and training like what's being provided through the grant is just really phenomenal to help prosecutors sort of gather all of our tools and really get a deep look at them and figure out how to use those tools to best help our victims, whichever way they come into the system.
Yeah. And I expect that grant, part of the purpose of that grant may be that it's something that then other areas can be able to take up the materials that have been developed and the training and so forth, Doreen.
Yes, the Department of Justice actually received the first grant several years back, and that focused on four other counties, which was Milwaukee, Outagamie, Door County, and the Oneida Nation. And so they reapplied to expand upon that, and that is how we are now into, the other four counties that I mentioned. So it's a very scripted training. It can be used anywhere. Currently, they're using this training for cadets coming out of the academy in Milwaukee, which has been very, very powerful.
I'm wondering, we have nursing homes throughout the state, and we haven't really addressed that, and hopefully that abuse doesn't occur there very often, but I imagine it can happen there.
It can, and it does, pretty regularly. My advice for anyone who has a parent or a grandparent in some sort of a facility is to visit often, check often, and make sure that your loved one is being taken care of.
Yeah, and if you suspect, Amber, if there, or what goes on if you think, hey, this is not right?
Yeah, I would just add to that. And if you're not in a position where you can visit regularly, maybe you live out of state, like Doreen mentioned earlier, or you're not as close, maybe you call them or you talk to them on FaceTime or something, but you can't maybe physically get there. If something, if you see something, say something. If there's something that tickles your mind that, hey, that just doesn't seem quite right, you can contact the Adult Protective Services in the county where your loved one is residing, in that facility, and they can go out and do that in-person visit. And so it never, like I said, it never hurts to just have that extra check. Even if nothing comes of it, and maybe you were overreacting or whatever, no problem. Your report still gets that response. And that can be really helpful. But I agree with Doreen that not that we shouldn't, you don't need to suspect everyone, but just keep your eyes open. And if something's not right, trust your instincts.
For sure. I'm wondering, just on the other side of it, if you have an elderly person who needs to go into a home, an assisted living facility or a memory care facility, what are the things that you would, Doreen, what would you look for if you had a loved one that needed to be in that situation?
I say do your homework thoroughly. The Department of Health Services has a website that anybody has access to. It's the Division of Quality Assurance, and they are responsible for licensing facilities. And they also are the place where complaints are lodged. So you can look on their website to see if this facility has had complaints. You can look at their past history, etc. So you really need to do your homework. And yes, it's a little cumbersome to get to all those places, but it's well worth it in the long run.
Yeah. And so what's the best place to look then again?
Under the Department of Health Services, the Division of Quality Assurance.
Marty in Lake Geneva, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Marty.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. A previous caller mentioned that they had a relative in another state. In this day and age with CCTV cameras everywhere, don't these facilities have cameras throughout? And I'll listen to your answer off air.
No. Thanks. All right. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So in a lot of these facilities, people are receiving personal cares. So some of them need assistance with toileting and other things. And so it's not really appropriate to have cameras throughout those types of facilities. Some of them may certainly have cameras, but they're generally, or they should be, only in more sort of large gathering rooms and not so much in the rooms where people are residing. And so, I mean, yes and no, there might be some cameras available, but probably if you have somebody who is being abused, you know, probably your perpetrator is not going to be doing that in an area that would have a camera.
Yeah, I suppose there might be cameras by the doors as well, to, you know, if somebody was going to walk out the door, although I know there are ways that can be avoided. So it's a big problem, I think. Well, if there's even one, to be perfectly honest, that is a problem. And we've got over 10,000 of them reported here in the state. And once again, in this last minute or so, if you think something is happening to a loved one, what do you do?
I say trust your gut, trust your instincts, and report. You don't have to prove that this is occurring. You just have to think it. You can remain anonymous and make a report. And just trust your own judgment, because oftentimes that is correct.
Yeah. And Amber, from your end?
Yeah, I totally agree. And if you're not sure what to do, you know, you can always pull up your web browser to Google or Bing or whatever your preferred one is, and type in Adult Protective Services or the county where the individual you're worried about is residing. Or like Doreen said, we have a statewide one here in Wisconsin that they'll do that work for you. So you just report it right to the state line, and they will refer it out to the proper county. Definitely echoing what Doreen said.
Well, I'm sorry we've had to have to talk about this in a way, but I'm really glad that you both were able to come and be with us today. I think everybody learned a lot. There are probably going to be a few phone calls and a few emails or going online to some of those sites to make those reports, and I hope that happens, and I really hope we can do this again. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Doreen Gash is a social worker who works with elder abuse victims through the Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging Resources. Amber Hahn, Assistant District Attorney for Fond du Lac County. They're doing some wonderful work, and it's unfortunate they have to. I'm sure they would rather be doing something else, but I'm really glad they're doing their work for sure. Well, we're going to stay with memory loss and that sort of thing and aging, and we're going to take a look next at treating and possibly preventing memory loss. That next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.